Welcome to the Views Podcast with your hosts, Nate Farmer Eden and Cole Farrell. Get ready to move even closer to financial freedom as they reveal the real estate investing strategies you need to acquire assets you can cash flow or flip. Now, let's get into today's show.
How are we doing today?
We're doing good. It's been a crazy week. I don't know what today is, but a few days ago, we were in North Carolina touring the biggest property to date. And so a lot of good things are going on. We got a lot of exciting pieces, but what else is happening?
Man, so much. I heard through the grapevine that somewhere floating in the airways, there's a company that's helping folks learn to hire a VA. Is this true? Did you hear about this?
There might be. We might have to just give some details on that in the chat, but I don't know. That's privileged information. I'm going to have to withhold that.
Oh my gosh. Holy cow. Okay. So for those that are interested to know more about that, make sure that you check out everything within the description. After this, there will be a link posted. But before we fully go all the way into it and introduce our special guest, Cole, you want to jump through some of our housekeeping?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right, couple housekeeping items. First, please leave us a rating and review so that we can grow and educate others. Second, please subscribe so that you do not miss another episode. And third, as always, buckle up because it's going to be a hell of a ride.
Oh, it's going to be so crazy. I'm excited. All right. So without further ado, I want to introduce a good friend of ours, Matthew. He is the founder and CEO of eStates. Matthew, come on stage, brother. Welcome in.
Hello, hello. It's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Of course. How you doing today?
I'm doing good this evening. I assume you have day jobs and that's why we're doing this at 7 p.m. Is that right?
Sort of, kind of. One of us does, the other one doesn't. 7 p.m. is just a hot spot where, you know, it's just where we get fired up.
Because it's at this point that I can't have coffee or my sleep schedule is going to be messed up. So I just have to run on like pure willpower to get myself all hyped up.
No, but we need to pause this and you need to go get a cup of coffee and come back and then we'll continue.
No.
We didn't have 250% today. We got this. But yeah,
this is fantastic. Just being here is all the excitement that I need. So I'm glad to partake in this conversation. We can kick it off.
Lovely, dude. Thank you so much, Matthew. So first question that I want to know a little bit about, man, what got you here? What brought you here? Why real estate?
Well, real estate accidentally, and really because of my cousin, but we'll get there. I've always liked building things. Like I've experimented with all different types of hobbies, computer programming, trying to build servers and apps. Eventually, I try to be a YouTuber and create contents that way. I published a book. I've published music, lots of music. I've traded the stock markets. I tried to build an e-commerce business. And eventually, I just made a really terrible stock market trade that took me out. And that's when I sat down with my cousin, who had been investing in commercial real estate at that time for probably 6 years. And he said, if you want to be in a market that actually builds your wealth, you should not be in the stock market, trying to buy stock options for Tesla and learn about real estate. And so he and I sat down one evening in a building that he had actually, he was part of the syndication. And so a lot of his capital made that building and the business within it possible. And we started talking about real estate and his experience in it, the real estate developer that he was working with, and some of his problems, the pain points that he was seeing as an investor and that real estate developers were experiencing. And I thought, this is so cool. Like I had never really thought about real estate at that time. But once you open your eyes to it and you realize everything on the face of the earth is real estate, literally, you start seeing dollar signs everywhere. It's like, oh, this commercial property, this can be built and it can be bought. People are actually doing these transactions and you don't realize that. Like an apartment building is just where people live until you realize, oh, someone bought or built it. There's money being exchanged behind the scenes and there's these leases and you realize that it opens up a Pandora's box where it's like, oh, you could, this is super lucrative. How do you not realize that the 1% and the major institutions are using these very buildings to generate wealth? And they have been for 100 years. So I absolutely wanted to dive in, and we started exploring that. And one of the things that he had unveiled was that the industry has really high entry barriers for a lot of investors to get in. You have to write these huge checks, whether that means you actually buying the property or if you're going to be a passive investor. You got to save up for a while, or you just need to be wealthy off the bat. And so he was saying at that time, hey, we should find a way to get people in for $500. And why is that not happening? And so that's where I got my start in real estate, exploring and teaching myself everything about the industry, but then also how to solve its problems.
That's amazing. So I want to ask, give us some more context on your company. So you started this after, you know, the dilemma you went through. You sat down, you talked to them about real estate, and you had this awakening. But what did it look like getting into that? You said you had this epiphany. Okay, what if people could get in cheaper? Tell us more about the journey, because a lot of our listeners are people that might be thinking of getting into real estate or starting a business. And what did it look like going from an idea to where you're at now? And what is that where you're at now?
Well, in both real estate or a startup, you're going to start with a crazy idea like, oh, I could literally build something. I could dump money and life and take on a bunch of risk for this, and it might turn out really well. So in the case of building a startup around real estate, the first thing that I did was put together a business plan. And this is very similar if you're getting into real estate. You're going to start looking at your market. You're going to start looking at deals. And it's kind of the same way as thinking about, well, where can I get a software development company? How do we actually go about this compliantly? What's the regulation around this? Who can or cannot invest in real estate at this time, and what's stopping them? And then we dove into customer discovery and just started talking to real estate developers. And whether you're an investor or you're trying to build a company, you should go talk to people in the industry, and you should do that for like a year or two and just absorb as much knowledge as possible. And like actually sit down, like you can watch YouTube videos where people give you very structured education, or you can have genuine conversations like we're doing right here. And that's where you get all the street knowledge, the tricks of the trade. And so knowing that I wanted to start a business for these real estate developers, and we had to understand what their problems were, but then also the woes of the investors, we just went out, started talking to people. And not only was this great from an educational standpoint where I get to learn, but then I get to apply that learning and build something. And once I started responding to people, you know, the reason why we're asking these questions is because we want to build a platform that helps more people invest in real estate. What if you could get into the grade A syndication that's making, because we're out of Milwaukee, making Milwaukee's top 1% very wealthy? What if you could get into that same deal and buy shares? What if it was super easy? You could go on an app and, like Robinhood, buy some shares in that property. Would that be a good experience? And investors said, yeah, that's so cool. Why does that not really exist right now? Or why is it not mainstream? What's going to be the household name? So we had that. And then we also talked to real estate developers and said, why aren't you working with more investors? And whether you have one unit or you have 1,000 units, you can resonate with the back office struggle, which is, you know, the paperwork, the compliance, the screening, the K-1s, the distributions. And as you get involved in bigger projects, the number of or the amount of capital you need scales. And either that means you're going to scale your investor size, asking for $1 million or $10 million at a time, or you have to work with more investors. And one of those is just not feasible. 500 investors on your cap table, that's a headache. And investors don't want to get involved in that either. It's messy. You're going to get overlooked. Your emails are not going to be responded to. There's not going to be any transparency. And so it's a lose-lose situation. So we said, if we fix that, then it's a win-win situation, because more investors means more capital. There's literally billions of dollars left on the table because investors just don't meet the right criteria. And that can go into projects that always need funding. Everyone at this time is looking for funding. You can go on LinkedIn and everyone's messaging each other. Hey, are you investing? Because I want to send you a pitch deck at this time. And you see people hiring for these roles and running ads. And you see projects that just don't come to fruition because there's not enough money. So if we can facilitate that connection in the middle, it is a win-win for the industry.
I love that. So good. So good. So taking it all the way back, S&P 500 decided to invest, lost it all. Say, you know what? I'm going to figure something out. Met with your cousin. You guys put your heads together, came up with a plan, implemented it. But what I need to know and what I'm dying to figure out is, can you enlighten me on some of the struggles? Like, did you have... where did you come up with the tech and the software to be able to implement this? And then where'd you get the courage to be able to then figure out I need to network with, you know, investors, brokers, the works to be able to put this all together? Man, talk to me about some of the headache and the struggle behind that.
Well, startups alone are a headache, and real estate is as well. And I'm doing both at the same time, which means that I I love what I do, but really I kind of hate it, but I love it. I love that I hate it. It's a pain in the ass. I mean, just on the basis of fundraising, raising capital for real estate is a full-time job. Raising capital for a startup is a full-time job, and I get to do both. And you can just imagine how much of a headache that is. To go to the beginning of your question, getting involved in the tech, I've always loved tech stuff. I mean, as someone who's in Gen Z, we grew up on tech. We've been exposed to it the whole time, whether it's AI or blockchain or just different type of software. We're having a podcast on software. This is stuff that I spend hours a day on because that's how the world operates at this time. And so to build a platform for investment, I mean, we were not the first ones to conjure up this idea. Obviously, it exists for the stock market, but there's been some attempts in real estate as well. So it just kind of seems like a no-brainer, like, oh, we'll build something, but then we'll build it better. And let's figure out how to do that. Is it a user interface problem? Is it that people can't figure out how to click the e-sign button? Maybe there's just not enough marketing, or there aren't good deals. And we figured out what's going to set us apart so that we don't join the graveyard of investment startups. And as far as the tech, I mean, it's so novel. A lot of people have heard the word blockchain and immediately, like, they're like, fuck off. I'm not getting involved in that. That's a scam. And then we immediately have to say, well, Goldman Sachs, Blackstone, JP Morgan, BlackRock, and all the other major financial institutions are leveraging it, and they just don't tell you. And we're going to do the same thing, because if you focus on the value propositions like automating back office, fractionalization, potential liquidity, or fostering investment from all around the world, all of a sudden they say, oh, well, I don't care about the word blockchain. If you can do all of that, that's really, really cool. And now, of course, crypto's at an all-time high. And so people are, oh, you know, I was kind of on the bandwagon the whole time. Ah, I should have gotten in 6 months ago when I was too busy ranting about how much of a scam it is. But the technology is really cool. And people are learning to leverage it in fascinating ways, not just investment opportunities, but in other areas in real estate as well. Like, you can use it in construction management. You can use it in asset management. And all of a sudden you see, whoa, we're transforming the whole life cycle of a property. And that's super powerful for investors, for brokers, for policymakers, for the sponsors, because you have transparency. You can move data around. You can start using AI to figure out, if I have this HVAC system, when does it need to be repaired? How many years out? Or when I've, because one thing that we didn't realize setting out, but was a stark discovery, was that when a building is first built, there's all this architectural and engineering data, which is necessary for a building to go up, and then it gets dumped. And that screws over the next three decades of people who are buying that property and don't know anything about the inner workings. And you've got problems with electrical, you've got problems with the piping. If we could pass on that information for years and it was like actually accessible and up to date, and we could start seeing, oh, this property, and even from a due diligence to due diligence perspective, this is super important, because oftentimes we'll look at properties and we'll think, hey, nothing could go wrong. We're going to be breaking even. And then you have a problem with the roof because it turns out it was not replaced when the real estate developer said so, or the last owner, or the windows are not energy efficient at all. And so you have little actual dollar signs seeping out between the crevices. All these things would be so nice to know. So the technology, already I've digressed. It's probably the most fascinating part, but it's going to make our lives so much easier as investors, as owners and operators, or as service providers. If you're a contractor, it helps you do your job better and you can relay that information. So this is going to be, I mean, what the next generation of commercial real estate looks like is going to be really, really exciting. So, I mean, obviously I have a passion for tech. So I took that and we realized there's so many applications for it. We have to find them all and we can build a business around it and put it out there. And people, I mean, they hear about this and they just get so excited. You've got smart cities, you've got the futurists, and people are lining up to leverage every possible product we could roll out.
I love that. I love that. And it's interesting because, like, especially as you scale like the bigger properties, whether it's a bigger multifamily or just a bigger size property or development, whatever it may be, it's interesting to see how much more important the tech becomes. Because as the problems get bigger, it just becomes so much more important. And all those little dollar signs that might not be a problem on a one or two unit are a huge problem on a huge property. And it's just interesting seeing how all that stuff gets more and more important. So we're excited to see where this tech goes. I mean, anything from just the AI nowadays to where it's going to head in a couple of years is going to be amazing. So super excited to see that and see where you guys take it. There's another question. Well, some I'll dial back to, but I want to jump into something that I'm just too antsy to ask you about, is the culture. And we were talking off script beforehand about how the real estate culture is changing. And your opinion on this is just very cool. And I think it's different, something that you brought up that people don't talk about. And so tell us more about that and just what you're seeing.
So there's two things happening here. There's three things. There's democratization of the industry. More people are getting involved. More people want equity in the buildings around them. They want to be able to generate wealth. We can't continue to disapparate the middle class. I mean, commercial real estate or real estate in general has been a one percenter game for a very long time. People have owned real estate and profited off of it. And how do they generate that profit? It's the people who are building the businesses in the middle class or renting, right? So eventually there's just becomes this gap in the wealth that's unstable. And you could look at it from an ethics standpoint. You can look at it from a business standpoint. The economy does not work so well when people don't have spending power because half of their check is going to just rent. So it's good to democratize access to investments and encourage more people to build wealth. And there's a financial incentive. And that's when people have a stake in something, maybe they own shares in the building beneath them, or they have equity in it, they're going to take better care of it. You are going to be a little bit slower to throw a Molotov cocktail at your local building and say, burn the rich, if that's actually your building in part. And then there's also this idea that people want assets and properties and developments that are a net positive to the community. There's a lot of properties that show up, some institution, some real estate developer out of state, you've never heard of them. They're building, they flatten the area, and no one really stands to benefit. We're seeing this more and more where it's like, no one can afford that. You put it over a wetland and it's ugly. It's atrocious. It's a cement jungle. And that's kind of pissing people off now. So we're seeing more and more people who want like actual beautiful buildings and amenities. they want to feel at home. And that's part of why I'm super interested in the adoption of more mass timber, because I think that has a very homely feeling, but that's a totally different conversation.
Wait, hold on. We got to go into that a little bit, because I was just having a conversation about this with somebody recently, and now I can't not say anything. So for those that don't know, just give a real quick snippet of what that means and just a little more information.
So mass timber, I guess we have to look at where timber is already used. Most houses are made of wood. People know that. But they're made of very thin wood. It's the plywood. It's the 2x4s. You can't build a skyscraper out of that. It tips over. But you can process the wood in such a way where you have these very thick beams. You create structures that are equivalent to steel or concrete in strength, but are made out of wood just by processing the wood and laminating it differently. And so what we're seeing more is that people are getting interested in mass timber for a few different reasons. One is it's a sustainable practice. We have dedicated forests for growing this type of wood, and then we cut them down, we build the buildings, and we replant the trees. So it's sustainable. Like, you don't run out of that resource.
And real fast, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is the forests that are growing incredibly quickly, right? These trees just grow at such a high rate of speed compared to normal traditional lumber.
Correct. I don't know all the different types of woods and the intricacies of the practices. I can refer you to someone who knows everything about mass timber. We're working with them. From a high level overview, yes, absolutely. So you've got these dedicated forests, they grow quickly, and then they turn into buildings. And the buildings, there's an environmental argument to be made where the concrete, the utilization of concrete emits a lot of carbon into the atmosphere. And so timber actually sequesters the carbon because trees consume that and you lock it into the wood. And so it's, if we look at, the environmental stage where, we have a lot of emissions, in the atmosphere and we need to reduce that. What if we use less steel and concrete and more wood? That's one possible argument for that. As I said before, I just think this is not the only reason I like it, but I do think it looks really, really cool. If you look at the interiors or the exteriors of buildings that are mass timber, they do feel like home. I mean, you can look at the room behind me. There's wood on my doors, but I've seen too many commercial properties that are brick or they're steel and they're cold and they're lifeless. And I think this is a nice way to infuse both elements. So mass timber is really exciting. It's really prominent in Europe. It's starting to pick up more in the U.S. It oftentimes has a low yield on cost, which makes it a little bit tricky to utilize in developments. But as we find more ways to make it cost effective, I think it will continue to pick up, especially because there are incentives at the government level, whether that's tax credits or grants, to enable these developments and move us towards a more environmentally friendly industry. So took a tangent onto mass timber, but looking
at that was my fault. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So looking at other changes that are happening culturally, we have the democratization components. We have a demographic change. There's $17 trillion that's going to be passed down from the silent and the baby boomer generations to Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z over the next, it depends on how long their lifespans are, but we'll say decade. That's a lot of money. And these are younger people who grew up in a completely different environment. The baby boomers of the 60s, 70s, and 80s look at the world differently than folks do nowadays. And so different priorities, different development styles, different investment strategies, that's going to change how people get involved in real estate. And it also means that there's a lot of money that is going to be moving around. And that means capital for the taking, whether you are an investor or a real estate developer, there's going to be money moving, especially as we work to make markets more liquid. the money is going to be out there, and it's going to be phenomenal to see these things in movement. Third, and this is sort of an extension of democratization, there's a socioeconomic change in who has access. I mean, this was once a very exclusive industry. You had to know the right people, you had to have money, and you had to come from the right places. But now it's sort of equal opportunity, where whether you're investing or you're trying to build a building, there's more chances for you to get involved. And even with the expanse of the internet, the fact that we can find people on LinkedIn and do deals with them, invest with them, build businesses, that's never been seen before. And it you don't have to show up at someone's office or be invited to their mansion or bump into them in the central business district. It's really an unprecedented cultural change in that way.
I love it. So, like, on the same topic, but before we get into our final section, which is the fun round, I love it. Can you give me a little bit more insight? When we're talking about collaboration, partnerships, working with folks, what does it look like overseas? What does it look like trying to bring folks in to be able to invest in communities that they might not live in? And how does that all encompass, especially with the tech side of it?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. And the real estate developers that we're working with find it interesting as well, because they tend to have very small networks. It's the rich people that they know in the neighborhood. And eventually those people run out of money. And when I say, well, what if we were to put your property on our platform, and then anyone in the state, anyone in the country, or anyone in the world, if they're so inclined to invest in you, could do so, especially at a low entry point, $500. People realize, whoa, there's billions of people in the world with lots of money. There's billions of dollars that become accessible to us for these projects. I think that's extraordinarily fascinating. If you can tell a good story and set yourself apart and attract international attention, that's very unique and it's very powerful. And because different investors also have different preferences. So, for example, we do see more European investors who are interested in the mass timber projects that are happening in the US. And so that's one way to access a different class of investors. They have different risk tolerances. Additionally, when it comes to like tokenization, this is sort of a foreign concept in the US, because we have a bad relationship with the word blockchain. But globally, Web3 is highly adopted. There are tens of millions, and there will be hundreds of millions of people on this technology. And so if you can say that you've tokenized real estate, you have the whole world at your fingertips for raising capital. And I think that's really cool. And when we look at secondary markets, well, to have proper supply and demand and equilibrium, you need as many people trying to trade as possible. And so you can't just have five people in Wisconsin. You have to have millions of people around the world if, when you go to sell, you find a buyer. So it's really connecting people across the globe, getting them involved in projects that they otherwise never would have seen. And that works both ways. If we can take US investors and show them high quality, opportunistic properties around the world, there's lots of benefit there. Whether it's, oh, I think this project is beautiful, I think it's valuable, it's a good return, it's in an emerging economy. Lots of potential there. So we're excited for the internationality and cross-jurisdictional investments that are going to be happening more and more over the next few years.
Love that. And there's so many questions I would love to dive into there, but we'll have to wait for a whole nother episode on international investing and all the intricacies there. But awesome, super cool concept. I think, Nate, that it's that time. What do you think?
Is it that time? Something's put. Oh, we got something from Matthew today.
Something's stewing.
All right.
Careful, Matthew. All right. What separates the top performing real estate investors from the rest of the crowd?
I would say it's risk tolerance. Fortune favors the bold. There's a lot of people who invest at the wrong times. They'll sit out when they should be investing, and they'll try to invest when they should be sitting out. So if you can figure out, and that's, I mean, pretty much Warren Buffett, right? It's, I mean, there's blood in the water, sharks. So time things right. People don't do that. And that'll separate the good from the great, or the good from the bad even. And it comes down to, what deals are you looking at? If you have bad deals, you're going to be a bad investor. You can't force it.
Beautiful answer. Well put. What is a daily habit that's contributed to your success?
That's a good one, and it's right in front of me, and I should have come up with something. I would say though I work out a lot, and it keeps me sane. I was talking about how crazy I go with all the freaking fundraising I'm trying to do, and when I can think about, like, it's great to clear my head when you're under the bar, because you can't be thinking about shareholders, you know, when you've got a bar on you, you die. So I'd say working out and going for walks and getting outside helps me stay sane in the digital world.
Love that. What is a piece of advice that you would give to yourself if you were starting again?
Start networking earlier. I wish I was going to more events. I wish I was on LinkedIn at like 15. That would have been fantastic, because there's one thing that you cannot rush, and that is relationships. Like, it doesn't matter how smart you are or how rich you are, you can't force a relationship. You have to give it 5-10 years to build up. And so that means if you want someone in your network now, if you need access to someone now, you should have been working on that 5 years ago. And so I wish that I was building a reputation, getting really good at interpersonal skills, and expanding my network just so that I was reputable many years ago.
That is so good. And just anybody that's listened to that, just rewind and listen to that again. So good.
Took the words out of my mouth. Golden nugget, again, just dropped. Rewind, pause, write it down, put it on your wall. Make sure that you reread that. What is your favorite real estate or business book?
Well, I don't read too many books. I have read Think and Grow Rich, and then I did the rest of my listening to books on audiobooks. I love to plug into podcasts and audiobooks. In terms of business, I would definitely refer people to Alex Hormozi and his work. But I mean, you could make this business or just people skills in general, human nature. The work of Robert Greene is really great. So I've been listening to Mastery, and just knowing when you should shut up and be humble and seek out mentors. And I think that's actually really good for real estate and for business. You should have a mentor. You should have an experienced operator. You should have someone that you are leaning into, because one, they probably have a good network. They have been in and out of the industry, and so they have that experience, that street smarts. And that is super valuable stuff that cannot be taught in books. And then they want to help you. If you find someone who wants to help you, they can make intros, they could put money your way, but they could get in the trenches. So Mastery has been great. Just find something, specialize it in it, spend years in it, and make it your life's work.
That's awesome. And I love that you brought that up, because that's something that we talk about all the time, whether it's at a meetup or on this podcast, is how important it is to have a mentor, coach, or whatever it is. And I can go on a whole tangent on how that can help you, and I'm not going to, but I think that is just so absolutely critical to have somebody in your corner. All right, last question for you. What is the biggest non-monetary benefit that you've gotten from investing and or building your business?
Impact, relationships, and meeting really, really cool people. It's so awesome who we get to bump into. I mean, real estate investors and developers and folks in those industries are literally changing the built world, everything around us. Those are going to be extraordinarily ambitious people and folks who have a legacy and leave a mark. I mean, you can't just leave a skyscraper and not influence or have impression upon millions of people. That's really fascinating. And so being able to learn or meet those folks, learn about their stories, and learn what drives them and become inspired by that, and then also reciprocate that. when we have accomplishments and people say, I saw what you did and I was motivated by that. I mean, that's impact. And until you have that moment, you can't really say, oh, success to me is impact. But then once someone comes to you and says, you inspired me, like I decided to go out and start a business or start investing. And it's like, wow, I changed this person's life. I think that is fascinating. And I just like people in general too. So building up relationships, getting to know folks, hang out with them, do business or have a beer. It's awesome.
I love that. I love it. Matthew, you made it through our POV point of view round. Amazing job. That wasn't too scary, was it?
No, it was not. It was fun. It was fun. I like it when the pressure is on and I have to fire off answers. And it's good for me, someone who likes to spend 10 minutes on a point. So it's good training.
Well, you're not off the hot seat just yet. I'm going to put you right back up there with a spotlight on you. And this has been an amazing podcast, a wonderful episode. Love having you on. We're, of course, going to bring you back. But before you go off of this episode, can you please give a piece of advice to those that are maybe still sitting on the porch, too scared to take a step off, hesitant about making an investment, not really understanding which direction to turn to go to first? Shed some light. Speak to them.
One thing that, well, three words that I always said to myself and I said to my friends say back to me is get after it. And I took that from Jocko. If you're sitting on the porch waiting for the right move, or if you're waiting for the right time, and come on, every single person, every motivational speaker or successful person ever has said, just start. That's all you have to do. Just start. Is it going to be day one or one day? So I know I'm not original in saying that, but I would take it one step further and not just start, but be consistent and continue and never give up. Because I always think whether I'm tired or if I don't know how I'm going to get over an obstacle, just get after it. Like, start pursuing. It's better to take action than just kind of sit on inaction. Again, fortune favors the bold. There's been so many times where I've hesitated before reaching out to someone, and then I think, screw it. I don't care. I'm going to send them a message. I'm going to send a bunch of follow-ups if I have to. Like, I want to be extremely successful, and that means that I need to keep the pressure on. And if you look at historical figures too, the people that we talk about for 300 years, Napoleon or Steve Jobs or Caesar or Alexander the Great, one thing that they always did is that they were always up to something. They were always after it. They always kept the pressure on. You don't just win a battle and then kick back and think, well, what am I going to do next? Like, you got to pursue and use momentum. And if you don't have momentum, then you just start your own momentum, right? There's a saying, if there's no wind, row. Like, just get yourself started.
Love it. I absolutely love that. There's just so many things that we talked about here between the tech and where that's going, your story of just where you came from and where you're planning to take this tech and how to revolutionize things, to the culture of real estate investing, just how that's changed and is going to continue to change. And then finally, just touching on the, you know, the world or the globalization of investing. And it's going to be really interesting to see how things turn out. But thank you for being here and just taking the time to be with us tonight and talk about this stuff. So we're definitely going to have to chat more and see where you're at, you know, in the near future and talk more. But until then, we really appreciate it. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been 10 times more fun than I was expecting late at night. And you guys are a blast to be with.
Appreciate it. Wait, I forgot one last question. Where can people find you?
LinkedIn is the best place to go. That's like my new favorite social media. It's the one social media that you can like scroll and you don't feel bad about it because it's, oh, I'm being professional. This is a business thing. So definitely Matthew Schneider on LinkedIn. You could also check out our platform, estates.com, and that's spelled e-states.com. And reach out. You know, you'll see our contact information there. I love having calls with people. So however you want to get started, you know, strike up a conversation, get after it. You just start with me.
I love it. couldn't have said it any better myself. So for everybody that is listening through the podcast side, get home safe. Thank you so much for tuning in to get another amazing episode of Views. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you all so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. And we will catch you all in the next one.
Thanks for listening to Views. If you enjoyed today's show, take a second to hit the like button. And if you haven't already, subscribe to our channel so you never miss an episode. Until next time, peace and love.